Okay, so peace, brothers and sisters. I want to welcome everyone to another town hall meeting, Black Wallace Matter town hall meeting. My name is Brother Lou. We have a new caller join us. My name is Brother Lou, and I want to just lay down a few ground rules, the way that we run these town hall meetings, so that everyone can understand that we're, you know, the organization and the structure. First and foremost, we address one another as brother and sister out of a show of respect and solidarity. During these town hall meetings, we don't discuss religion, we don't discuss the black male and female dynamic, and we don't discuss political party affiliation. Those are all opinion-based things. Someone says I'm right, someone says I'm wrong, we'll go around and around in a circle forever. We can discuss politics as it relates to black people here in America and how we can use it to improve our situation. But we don't really want to get into which party did what and who did whatever. So for all those who don't know, Black Wallets Matter is a movement comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we're going to fix the problems in the black community is if we do it ourselves and start using the power of the black dollars that we already have. It's estimated that we spent about $1.3 trillion last year. So if we practice group economics, we can have a major impact on our community. So now when I say the power of our black dollars, I don't necessarily mean spending them in every case. I mean we could possibly withhold them from people who do not agree with our agenda in the form of boycott. When we spend our money, this organization will spend its money on addressing three major issues in the black community. One, it is poverty, black poverty, which affects 78% of single black mothers. Under and unemployment, which affects our community at more than double the rate of the white community. I think we're at like 50%, they're at like 9 or something crazy like that. And we are going to address this wave of racial police police brutality and these officers killing our brothers and sisters and getting off and getting away from with it. The vehicles we will use to address these issues are in regards to poverty and unemployment. We will purchase large-scale businesses such as manufacturing facilities and supermarket chains and things of that nature. And we will be able to employ hundreds and possibly even thousands of our brothers and sisters. In regards to dealing with the police violence, we are going to hire lawyers and lobbyists. Brother Cujo and I were looking into this diligently this past week, especially with the Philando Castile thing going on. We've estimated we may have to allocate something in the neighborhood of $10 million a year just to have our people on the job so that incidents like these will stop occurring. Basically, this organization is about people, is for brothers and sisters who are sick and tired of being sick and tired. So if you're sick and tired of what's going on in the black community and you are looking for a well-organized plan to get us from point zero to 100, that's what this organization is about. We have a blueprint presentation on the website that outlines our plan from soup to nut. It gives you the numbers. It breaks everything down, how we go from right now we're looking for 2,000 members, how we go from 2,000 members to our overall goal, which is 1 million members over the next 3 to 5 years, and how the association membership dues, so this is a member association, how the association membership dues, how that's leveraged into quite possibly $336 million. That is the target revenue range that we are looking at. Again, like I said, to anyone who hasn't had the chance to watch the blueprint, please, you know, watch it. If it resonates with you, then we implore you to become a member. That is what our main goal is with these town hall meetings and our current campaign. We are trying to get 2,000 members so we can move to this next step of our organization. Now, I have some very good news, especially for the members that are on the call. We have quite a few guests, And the reason why is because we have had a phenomenal week in regards to our promotions and in regards to what's been going on with our organization. So I want to just let everyone know in terms of like our Facebook page. So that's our main hub of promotion and recruitment and things of that nature. So this past week, we have reached 4,779,389 people. This is our most phenomenal week ever. That's the type of reach you get on a TV show. We have had 3,500 people sign up to come on to the call or find out what we have going on, check out what's going on in regards to Black Wallets Matter. And we have had, I don't have the exact number of members, but we do have quite a few new members on the call right now. And I want to acknowledge Brother Howard, and I want to acknowledge Sister Trevane, and I believe Sister Allison. And, of course, we have our stalwarts. We have Brother Cujo, Sister Bonnie, Sister Barbara, Sister Jamie. So I just want to say to everyone that it's really important, you know, that we get this message out there, this message of positivity. Now, some of you guys have come in based on this video that we had that went viral that was talking about Black businesses, but you guys were sharp enough to understand that we put that video out there, but under there was a message saying we're actually trying to rebuild the Black community. We want to do something positive for the Black community. And so here you are. And so I want to applaud you and thank you guys for coming on the call, because this past week I have been cursed out and I have been dragged through the mud and I have been, I mean, like some people, they just didn't get it, right? So they were like, yo, you MF-er and F your organization and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. And we were trying to explain to them that on social media, sometimes we have to put the type of content that our brothers and sisters want to see, which is something controversial, something ratchet, in order to piggyback our message of positivity along with that. And so we're glad that, you know, you guests especially, you know, were able to pick up on that. So that means that we're doing something right. So on the agenda for this evening, I just closed my notes. Could you believe that? Okay, so on the agenda for this evening, since the majority of you came in from that video in discussing Black businesses, we will discuss how Black businesses, how the creation of more Black businesses can help the Black community. So as I was preparing my notes, I got a call this morning from a sister. I don't even think she was on a call, but I got a call from a sister this morning, and she said, are we planning to take over the Black hair care industry? And I was like, well, you know, it's something to consider. Now, we have Sister Bonnie. She mentioned it. She's mentioned it a few times these past few weeks, but I never looked at it in earnest. But then the sister told me it's something like $500 billion. Now, I'm not exactly sure that it's that much, because if we spent $1.3 trillion in total, $500 billion is like almost a quarter of that, more than a third of that. But, you know, I don't know. But it's very, very big numbers, and we all know that. And so she was saying, especially now with the internet, with, you know, with Black people being more upwardly mobile, there is no reason why we cannot either travel to Asia, make the inroads necessary to find out where those products are being manufactured, create our own inroads, and come back. And then I was saying, well, sister, what about the distribution? And she said the important part of that of the beauty care industry is, aside from the nails, we control the service part. So that's through our salons and through our barbershops. And she's 100% right. And now there are more sisters becoming nail techs. So because we have the service part down pat, we should just piggyback the product. And she's saying, barbershops, beauty salons, that's where you buy that's where you go after you go to the Koreans to get your supplies. So Black people, you know, they're saying, like, amongst our people, we may have a hang up with supporting our people on this note, or we may have a hang up with buying, you know, something else from our brothers and sisters, But we're not about to go let somebody else play in our head. Like, the things that count, we're not going to play those games. So when she said that to me, I said, wow. And I wanted to bring that to the group, and I wanted to look at it in earnest. So when I looked at it, it was something like $600, almost $700 million just on the product side, right? So that's what we're leaving on the table. We're leaving $700 million on the table when we already control the service side of the equation. So it's just a matter of reaching out to our black barbers and beauty salons. And for those who don't know, I have a barbershop in Brooklyn. It's been open for 21 years, whatever. But I do sell things. So I sell hat brushes, do-rags, and cologne and perfume. And I used to have a delivery route where I took those same products and I sold them to other barbers and in salons. So this is definitely a viable business. So I'm going to open the floor up for input from anyone who may have ideas in regards to how we can gain control of our beauty care, health and beauty care industry. And that also includes lotions and potions and all these other types of things. And anyone who has any experience in distribution and the marketing part of it. Before I open the floor, I want to acknowledge new callers that came in. When you have your comment, press *6 on your phone. I'm going to put it in Q&A mode. Press *6 on your phone. You'll be in the queue, and then I'll unmute your phone, and then you can leave your comment or your question. Like I said earlier in the call, please be mindful of other people that are in the queue, because we do have quite a few people on the call tonight. So let me acknowledge caller from area code 972. Caller 972 area code. Who's on the line? Hello? Caller? Okay. Well, I'm going to put the call in Q&A mode. So if you have any comments or questions, press *6 on your phone. Okay. So we have Sister Bonnie and we have Sister Trevane. Sister Bonnie, you're up.
Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Okay, great. I don't have a question. I have a comment. One thing that we do need to do in this field is we got to get these Asians out of our community. I've seen where one company actually got really upset about how they were treating our sisters and our brothers when we go in there to buy products, and they pulled their products out of their store. And I think we may need to kind of light a fire under some of our manufacturers that manufacture the products for our hair and our skin care to do the same, because it's not right. We want to be treated just like anybody else. So I think that one thing he actually made a start. He walked in and he said, I'm pulling all my products, and he pulled everything off that man's shelf. And he will not sell to that guy at all, this Asian guy at all. And I think we need to follow, they all need to follow suit and look at other outlets like our salons and our barbershops and our beauty supply shops that are already out there. And there's more coming. And I do also think that we will eventually need to have a distribution center just for our product.
Okay, sister, wait, the gentleman, because this is the second time you're saying that. The gentleman who, the gentleman who's pulling the products, who is he? What is the company? Is it the
Bonner Brothers? I'm trying to think now what the company was. I'll have to go back into my Facebook and find it again, but I saw this the first part of the week, and I know if I sent that to you or not.
No, I didn't see that. You update me with everything, a lot of things, but no, I didn't see that. But look at this, because you said I were black manufacturers, and that's interesting, because I want to know how many. So I know, I believe it's the Bonner Brothers or something like that. I want to know who or how they are. So I import products. I import hair. I still sell hair, but when I initially started, I was importing hair from India, and then I was importing hair from Korea and China and places like that. There were no black people in that chain. And then when I buy my brushes and, you know, my neckties and things like that, all of that comes from China. I would love to buy that in America from a brother or a sister. Of course, you know, and so look, thinking as a business person, I got to think about the numbers, because the market will only bear a certain price. So that's something that we need to consider as well. But I had a brother that contacted me from Korea this week. Yeah, the brother contacted me. He's in Korea. We're everywhere, y'all. Like how they say, you know, find black folks everywhere. We're everywhere. So I'm going to reach back out to that brother and see, is there something that we could do over there, maybe set something up. The other thing, too, is if we could just jump in front of the Koreans that are stateside or even use their same suppliers, it wouldn't matter. We could put the very same product in front of our brothers and sisters that they're used to. It's just it's coming from a black person. You know, like what I do, I buy my product. It's the products that they're used to. It has the brand names that they're used to. So,
right.
Sister, please look that up, and
there's a number of companies that are stateside that are selling the beauty products, and then there's a number of companies also in Africa that's doing the same thing.
Okay, so could you please forward me that list? Because this is something that we need to look at and earn.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, sister. All right, so we have a few more callers in the queue. You have anything you want to add in conclusion, sister?
Nope, that's all I had.
Thank you, sister. All right. So we have Sister Trevane, Brother Deontay, and we have a caller from area code 469. I'll ask you your name shortly, brother or sister. Okay, brother, Sister Trevane. Hello, sister.
All right, because like, when are we gonna have more black-owned banks and more black-owned credit unions? Like in the state I live in, there is only only one black-owned bank, and it's all the way in Newark. Come on, that's crazy.
I actually had someone contact me about a credit union today. She said that she had a credit union, but she didn't get back to me. So I don't really, you know, I can't answer that question. But if you could hold that question, let us address this particular issue that's on the floor now in regards to the beauty industry. If you can hold that issue, I'll be sure to come back around, and then you can let everyone, we can have everyone weigh in on that. Does that work for you, sister?
Yes, I would love a black-owned bank near me, because I would love to start banking black as well. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you, sister. Okay. Brother Deontay.
Hey, what's going on, brother?
Peace.
Deontay Thibodeau here, everybody. So I'm a serial entrepreneur, and I've started a few businesses, and one of the latest ones is actually tackling the hair distribution for extensions primarily right now. So I'd love to probably talk with you offline about some of the supply chain work my team is doing to get closer to the source in India from the temple. So we might be able to help out from a distribution standpoint, from without us having to go to the source. we're kind of building that supply chain so we can allow brothers and sisters to buy stateside and still pass through a lot of the cost savings.
Okay. All right, well, bro, yeah, we definitely need to talk. I will just, you know, briefly my experience when I started, so I started about 3 or 4 years ago, the sisters, they wanted the top quality hair, so the hair lasts really, really long. The hair from India, it's, you know, you get it in like large kilos, actually, and you break it down, you send it to get wefted, and we were getting raw hair, and so we were processing it and going from that perspective. But, you know, we would basically have to sell into the market what they demand, what they want. That's where we are now. I have my repeat customers. They come, they found the hair that they like. That's all they will buy. They're not even playing around anymore. So, you know, we'll discuss that. We'll discuss that, you know, behind the scenes, like we said. And, brother, yes, man, I welcome the opportunity to work with you, especially if you could provide, you know, something, you know, helpful like that, distribution or supplying.
Stateside. Absolutely. No, yes, definitely. Right. Let's get something on the calendar maybe for next week. We can chat about it.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so we have Brother Khalifa. We had the other caller. They hung up. So we have Brother Khalifa. Brother Khalifa. Hello?
Yo, peace and blessings to the brothers and the sisters, man.
Peace, brother.
Hey, man, I feel like this, you know, I definitely understand the approach that needs to be taken. You know, I also feel like we in a competition with the Koreans. We in a competition with the Asians. We in a competition with the other individuals who are doing these things. So in order to boost us or put us at the forefront, so that our brothers and sisters do come shop with us, our brothers and sisters do come think about us first, we got to entice the mind so that the body follows. You know what I'm saying? And I mean by, you know, once we hit that distribution standpoint in which we can go straight to the supplier and don't have to be the middleman, you know, entice the mind, entice the brothers and the sisters by, hey, sisters, I see that you graduated cosmetology school or whatever the case may be, I could provide you with some type of incentive for coming to shop with me. You know what I'm saying? I can entice, because the Koreans not doing that. The Koreans want dollar for dollar, whether it's hair, nails, whatever they eat. You know what I'm saying? Let's entice the mind. Let's entice the mind of our brothers and sisters to come shop with us. You know what I'm saying? So that they not only do they feel comfortable, but, hey, they're getting the bang for their buck. They ain't getting ripped off. They're getting treated politely and respectfully, and then for coming to shop with us, just like a free car wash. You know, you go to Subway, and you get six subs, you get that seventh one free. You buy six packs of Yaki, you get the seventh one free. You buy eight this, that, and third, you get the next one free. You know what I'm saying? We got to learn how to entice the minds with our brothers and sisters so that they do feel comfortable coming with us. Because, again, man, we in a business standpoint, we in a competition with the Koreans. We in a competition with the Asians. They're going to keep pumping. They already in. They're going to keep pumping. They got a clientele base. We trying to reach that clientele base. So I feel like once we have mastered distribution, you know what I'm saying, once we have mastered the art of understanding the suppliers and so on and so forth, then let's attack and let's stay focused. Let's not try to build ourselves and expand ourselves to where we were ourselves being. Let's build a business for strictly like the Koreans. Because here in Huntsville, they got a Solid Gold beauty supply around the corner. Everybody and they mama be there. Line up. And they not giving no deals. They not cutting no deals. They don't care if you came here the first time or this open time. They going to charge you the same price. So or as a business man, the only way I'm going to cut myself in is I got to be able to entice the consumer. And if it's my brother and sister, well, let's highlight the successes of my brothers and sisters. Let's be able to get give a giveaway with the wall clipper set, you know what I'm saying, to the brothers who graduated top of their class in barber college. Yeah. Let's be able to give a giveaway to the sisters who graduated the top of the state in cosmetology classes to the point where when they establish themselves, they want to come shop back with us. You know what I'm saying?
They
coming to do different things with us so that we stay in there. You know what I'm saying?
Brother, you are 100% correct in regards to being competitive. You know, being competitive in the beauty industry, and giving our brothers and sisters a reason to shop with us. That will come with us having the proper budget, right? So the advantage that the Koreans have is that they're well financed, and then they have the supply chain. But I am in a total agreement with you that we need to give them some type of incentive. Maybe, quite possibly, it would just be the knowledge that, listen, you're shopping, you know, you're buying black, the money is staying within the community, and, you know, something like that. So, like, what I do in my business, we give out book bags and school supplies when it's back to school. Thanksgiving, we do dinners, right? So we don't do it every year, but some years we actually open on Thanksgiving and we do that. So you are 100% correct in regards to what you're saying, and that would be a great marketing strategy. We have a few callers who are on the call now. So they probably are not understanding what's going on, and I want to kind of address them for that, you know, because they came on a little late, so I want to update them and let them know what we're talking about. Do you have anything you want to add, brother, in conclusion?
No, I'm good. Go ahead. You can
okay.
Go to the caller.
Okay, excellent, brother. All right. So let me address a few callers that came in. Brother Howard is in the queue. Brother Howard, just give me a second. Let me address. We have 1, 2, 3 new callers, and then I'll open up your phone. Caller from 972 area code. Welcome, brother or sister.
Hi, I'm Tish. Hi, I'm Tish. And
Tish,
I was just joining in. You spoke with Deontay earlier, and
yes,
I am pretty much, I'm his mom, but I'm a part of the company that we're trying to start a distributing company, and I know he spoke. And basically, it's just I'm just tuning in, and it's very informative information. So,
Okay, thank you, sister. If you have a question or a comment in regards to the topic, and I guess I'll reiterate what the topic is, and we're basically talking about how to reclaim our beauty supply, beauty healthcare industry, because it's 500 million, close to some billions of dollars, and how we can use that, how we can reclaim that and use that to rebuild a certain, you know, certain aspects of the black community. Let me address the other callers. I'll mute your phone
okay.
Now. And if you want to get in, like I said, press *6. All right. 707 area code. Welcome. Hello? 770. Hello, caller?
Hi, yes. This is Allison Jackson.
Sister Allison.
Uh-huh.
How are you? Okay.
I'm good, thanks.
Okay, so again, if you have any comments or questions, just press *6 to get in the queue. Let me address, we have one more caller. Caller 202 area code? 202 area code?
Yeah,
sister. I don't know why they didn't drop your name. Okay, got you. Okay, sister, you know how this works, so. It just dropped your name. I couldn't see. And then we had a caller from 469 area code. Hold on. Let me. Caller from 469 area code. What is your name? Hold on. What is your name, caller?
What? Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. Yes. I'm Jason Nicholson, from Dallas.
Brother. I saw you were in the queue, and you dropped out. So it was you and Brother Howard. Brother Howard was you dropped out the queue and Brother Howard moved up. So just let Brother Howard address the issue, and we'll get right to you. You're next in the queue. Okay, brother.
Sounds good.
Cool. Okay, brother Howard,
Yes.
Okay. So just to reiterate for our new callers, as we told Sister Tish, so this discussion on the floor now is about, so we were discussing black businesses. A sister called in earlier and said that the black hair care industry specifically is, she said, $500 billion. You know, the numbers I looked up was somewhere, the products were $600-700 million, but that excluded the service portion of it. So that's the salons and the barbershops, the massaging, the nail techs, the lotion, I mean, you know, well, not the lotions, but, you know, whatever it is that we provide. And so she said that it would, you know, it would be wise to try to dominate that complete industry because it's not really a hard sell to try to convince, you know, our brothers and sisters that they need to take care of their grooming and health and all these other things. So, Brother Howard, you have the floor. What do you would like to contribute?
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say I have a cousin who does hair. And she just opened up on 34th Street in New York City. And she has her own parlor. She was working under somebody else. And she has her own parlor. And she's doing pretty good. And this is you know, I really hadn't heard too much about the hair care industry. But this is a good way to get people, you know, to give people an opportunity, those who have experienced it, of course. But me, I'm all about action. You know, what are we going to do to put things into action, to get things rolling? You know, I think we need to have more support with any type of business, with our own funding, you know, own funding, like try to get some people off the ground, you know, help them get off the ground, have different conferences every month or every other month for different types of industry, you know, different types of things that we may want to do. Me, myself, I'm in the transportation business. I run a little bus company out of the New York City area, but we're having a rough time. Most of the black bus companies, we don't have the funding, we don't have the capital, you know, and we definitely don't have the clients, you know. And once we have those conferences, you know, every other month, you know, me and a couple of my buddies can help provide transportation, you know, and it'd be a good way for us to get to meet one another. You know, of course we can't really put things into action until we sit down at the round table. I mean, this phone thing is good, but we need to meet in person, you know?
Oh, well, all right. So, brother, you know, you became a member this week, last week.
Yeah.
That is the initial step. But just so you know, there are brothers and sisters from all over the whole country that are members. So the thing, like what you're saying in regards to the transportation business or in regards to helping out individual businesses, that's something that we want to look towards, you know, going forward in the future. But our immediate plan is to take the money that we have from the association membership and use that money to leverage into a larger scale business. Because
yes.
we have a two-pronged approach that we're trying to attack, which is to employ more of our brothers and sisters, and then the money that we invest, it needs to come back, right? So the original capital needs to come back, and then a profit needs to come back on top of it. When the sister
right.
said the hair, when the sister said the hair care industry, like my mind, the light bulbs went off because we all know. So on the service portion, your barber, your stylist charges you what she charges you. That's service. That's all profit minus her
right.
time on her feet, his time. But the products, most of those products, the markup on them is more than 100%, but at least 100%. So
right.
so that gives us like a three. That gives us almost like a layup, right? In terms if we're able to penetrate that business. One, we know our people already buy that. We know they already support. It's just a matter of us finding, you know, finding where to get it. And then this is the other good part. We have so many salons. We have so many barbershops, especially in New York. Like I said, my shop is in Brooklyn, right? So, and you sound like you're uptown. Is that where you are, in the Bronx or somewhere like that?
Yeah, I'm up there. Exactly.
Right. There are thousands. There are hundreds of thousands, of possibly tens of thousands at least, I believe. Could you imagine if we have brothers that have distribution routes? So at the beginning of the call, I mentioned I had a route. That's what I got. So I had my barbershop, but then I also had a van that I slapped a bunch of my hats and brushes and do-rags and the Cole Sanex, the strips that go around your neck, and
right.
You know, the board hair brushes and all of that, and powder,
right.
And the Clubman,
yeah.
And all of that. I had that loaded up in a van and had like a route. Another brother could have did that. Another brother could have actually did $500, $700, $1,000 a week.
Right.
That's a job. That could be, so that could employ more of our brothers and sisters. So it's just, I wanted to bring this idea to the floor, but actually I wanted to, like, Sister Bonnie brought it up 2 weeks. I wanted to find out, gauge the interest, see who else is interested, you know, as part of the group, and see if it's something that we really should apply some time and energy working towards. Because, you know, we have our agenda. We are following what's going on in the blueprint. But this may be something that's easily accessible. And since I'm already importing things, since the other brother said he's working on importing things, and I know that, you know, doing a lot of these things is just a matter of emails and phone calls, this may be our easiest way to start getting the ball rolling.
I agree.
So I want to speak with you behind the scenes in regards to logistics and in regards to your transportation in New York. Okay, brother?
No problem.
All right. So, brother Jason, could you please press *6? Okay. Brother Jason, could you please press *6 and hop back in the queue? Sister Bonnie, I see you, sister. I just want to give the brother a chance to get his comment or question in. Okay, brother.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm Jason Nicholson. I'm from Dallas, Texas, part owner in a film company here, and I really just want to give my piece out that one thing with the businesses that we're dealing with, you know, like in the past, you know, history shows that, you know, a lot of the time that, you know, these businesses, most of the time, all, if not all the time, you know, our businesses are sabotaged or, you know, given, you know, horrible imagery and publicity in the news media. So, you know, I just wanted to let it be known that, you know, with me owning the part owner of the media company, we'd be glad to kind of give, you know, business advertisement, business, you know, we also do animation there, you know, animations, logos, graphic design, at a really good price, for the businesses, you know. I mean, we're also doing, starting up a news site part of our company. So, you know, we'll have news. So, you know, it'll be a good way to kind of get good publicity on certain, you know, different businesses that are doing certain, you know, whatever venues that they're directed at, and you know there's a network that we can host that at, and just give good publicity at. So I just want to be known, you know, there's a film and animation company here, videography company that you know that we can host a good realm of media and publicity to the businesses here. So. We're a normal network is what we're called.
That is something that we definitely can use. To your point, so when it becomes something, we want something to be newsworthy though, right? So we don't want to just put out a half-assed effort. You work your magic.
Absolutely.
You get us the exposure, you do whatever, and then we don't live up to the expectations.
Right.
It's definitely good. It's good to know. What we will do, though, is we will see, we will talk behind the scenes in regards to how we could push this, you know, possibly get a little bit more exposure for this organization and, you know, our message. So sure. I thank you for coming on the call, brother. I appreciate you, and we hope you can we hope you can join us for more town hall meetings. And so you're a guest, and so we hope that you can check out the blueprint and, you know, become a member if that, you know, if it resonates with you. All right.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks so much.
All right. Peace. Sister Bonnie.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I won't end on that behind the scenes. I won't end on that. That's something that I really would like to do. I mean, I understand that you on one end of the country, I'm on the other. But
right.
I think we could hook something up where it's going to be profitable on both ends of the country, and then probably drag somebody else in the middle to fill in that gap, where this could truly turn into something that would be nationwide.
Right. Yeah, I had every intention of bringing you in on that, because I really didn't want to manage all of it. But when she started talking those numbers, you know, 500 billion, and I love large.
No, it's more like 700 million, 700 million to 800 million.
Right. But that's the product side. So, but it doesn't include the service side, and it's kind of hard to quantify the service side, because most of our services are still paid in cash. And that's something else I wanted to bring us, but I wanted to hold it when to give Sister Trevane the phone one more time, but to give her the floor. But that's something that it's not quantified, and I just want to bring that up. If you're finished, if you have something you want to add, I want to say that, and then I want to bring something to the floor, and then let Sister Trevane talk about the financing and the black banks and things like that. Because she also
the last thing I wanted to say is there are a number of black banks in the country. There's not just one. They're not everywhere, but they're there. There's several in Atlanta. There's several in Texas. There's like three or four of them in California. There's a number of them. I'll have to do some more research and start pulling some locations and some names. And get that information to you, too.
All right. Thank you so much, sister. Thank you so much.
That's all I got.
Okay. Thank you. Well, wait, we have Sister Jamie in the queue. Sister Jamie. Hello?
Yes. Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you can.
All right. Perfect. I just wanted to make a statement, and I really don't want to seem brash, but I think that sometimes we become disillusioned with certain things that we are looking to see in the black community, specifically when we're referring to like businesses and everything of that nature. Now, hair care, obviously, that's something that we obviously spend money on, so it makes sense to go that route. But I think sometimes even businesses outside of that, you usually see like black-owned businesses, and it's usually something of a niche market. And in doing so, you're limiting your exposure or how much money you can possibly or how successful you can possibly become. So if we constantly just stick to those things that you know are, not to say that you have to move away from those niche products or niche services, but if you more so focus on things that you know are absolutely necessary, just as hair care and, supermarkets and things of that nature that you know that we would absolutely need. And it doesn't even necessarily mean that you have to build it from the ground up. You can go into your own community and see how much it will cost to actually take over your local supermarket or take over and buy your whatever else is there, a clothing store, what have you, or a bank that's a little bit different, but, businesses like that. So That's one point I wanted to make. Also, I just wanted to
say. Let me ask you. Are you saying that in reference? Are you saying that individually? Or are you saying that to us as a collective for
as
in
a
terms
collective.
Of what we're. Well, you know what our thing is as for the blueprint. So you know our objective is to buy large scale existing businesses like manufacturing plants that correspond with the government grants that we can get. So,
that's why the blueprint. No, absolutely, and that's why the blueprint makes so much sense. Now, to bring people to that conclusion, I know that it's going to be a daunting task because for several different reasons. But in any event, I do believe that the blueprint itself it makes all the sense. But that's definitely something that I could definitely put my two cents behind. But aside from that also, I just wanted to make a point to state that I think sometimes too often we try to put ourselves in a situation where we're waiting for a savior. We're waiting for someone to open up something that you want. If you see that there's a need for something and it's something that you specifically feel the need of, take the initiative to see if you can be a part of opening it or bringing it into your community yourself, you know?
I mean, I have comments on that, but I'm not going to comment because it is something that is good advice. But, you know, because of my years of experience as an entrepreneur, you know, I've become more risk adverse, right? So a seasoned business person would come into the area and say, well, listen, if they don't have a chicken place, the reason they don't have one is because they don't want one. But I could be right, it could be wrong. I'm not gonna beat that drum. I appreciate your input though, sister. I wanna give Sister Trevain the floor in regards to the bank. And I know you had some input into that. Did you want to weigh on that, or was that someone else?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going to pick on you. I expect you to contribute. So get ready to press star 6. All right, sister.
Okay.
How are we going? All right. Sister Trevain, please press star 6. Hello, Sister Trevain. Sister Trevain. Hello. Okay. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if she can hear. We can't hear her. But what I wanted to say, though, and I thought about this a few weeks ago, and I was going to make a blog post. We are so powerful in this country, it's not even funny, and we don't even realize it, and this pisses me off. And the main reason why we are so powerful is because in our communities, we still deal with cash. We deal with key. We've all heard the saying, cash is king. If you read what's going on in the general population, if you read what's going on in mainstream America, they're arguing credit limits are stretched. They're being targeted with, so first it was the subprime loans on mortgages, and then it was now it's cars, and now it's student loans, and who knows what they're going to come up with next. The thing about us is that we keep cash, and when everything crumbles around us, we are going to have freaking cash. And then, you know, a lot of that is, you know, some of us, we just don't kind of trust banks. And then, you know, people like me, I like having my cash. I like having my money. I like touching it. So, we can use that to leverage. That can be leveraged to do oh so much more. So you have people who are saying, you know, the dollar is falling and blah, 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 blah. If someone is starving and someone needs to do something, a dirty, wrinkled, crusty $5 bill is like a $100 bill to them. And that's something that we need to consider. And this view, our beauty in healthcare, our beauty in all of that, that's where a lot of our actual cash goes. It goes into that and it goes into food. And we can really look at dominating those industries, especially the hair care industry. If we can dominate that, we can keep a lot of that cash and put it to work. And then we all know when you have the money, you get way better deals, especially if you don't need credit terms. And so I know, like, so some of the Koreans that get their supplies, they get 90, 60, 180-day credit terms. They get a lot of that stuff just sent to the store, and then they just keep pay their tax. If we go and we're saying, hey, look, we're coming to the table with $100,000 or whatever it is, we want this, you know, we want this discount or we want a better price or whatever it is, that may provide us with some leverage. So I just wanted to say that to everyone, just know that our black wallets and our dollars specifically matter. Sister Trevain is not weighing in. In regards to the banks, to the issue, to the thing that she wanted to bring to the floor. So if anyone else has another topic that they want to discuss, that they want to bring to the floor, plus press *6. So we have a lot of new guests on, so if there's anything. I know Sister Deborah Battle, you called me earlier and you were talking about the education. If that's something that you want to bring to the floor, press *6. Sister Tish, Brother Jason, Brother Howard, Sister Allison, if there are any of these things that you guys want to bring, to the group, then, now's the time. Okay, Sister Deborah and then Brother Jason. Okay, let me get you. Sister Deborah. Hello? Hello, sister? Sister? You're pressing star. Wait. You pressed *6. I think you muted yourself. You're probably going to have to hang up and come back in.
Hello?
Oh, wait. There you go. There you go. Yep.
Hello, everyone.
How you doing?
My concern is about the education of our youth. How the school systems are really failing our children. And we need to come up with a way in which we can help our children to learn. I'm not exactly sure if it's all based upon, the parents not being willing to help their children or not being able to help their children. But the school systems are failing the black community. And we need to find a way in which to fix that system. I'm from Houston, Texas. And it's really a shame a lot of young adults finish school and they really do not have a high reading level, that they seem to be behind. And we need to get some kind of solution to those problems so that our children can go on to college or go to a trade school. But a lot of us go to college and end up taking remedial courses for 1 or 2 years. So I think that's a big problem.
Right. Okay, Sister Barbara weighed in. Brother Jason, I see you in the queue. I kind of did this wrong. Hold on. I was supposed to unmute Sister Deborah's phone and allow everyone to weigh in, but you and Brother Jason weighed in at the same time. Let Sister Barbara address that. Hold on for a moment. Sister Barbara.
Can you hear me?
Sister Barbara. Yes. Brother Jason, I'm going to get to you in a second. Yep, I can hear you, sister. Yep.
Okay. As a former educator, it's not just in Houston. This is nationwide. And this is one of the ploys that is being used against us to keep our kids from learning. I deal with special needs kids right now, but I see it in regular ed kids also. The system is, they've changed the system to where after integration and they started busing and all that nonsense, they changed the system to where what they had been teaching in schools, they are not teaching anymore. What's got to happen if we want our kids to stay afloat in this system or even surpass that system is we've got to go to like centers, and make the proposal of adding like tutoring or something, and then have, you know, talk to some of these black teachers and see if you can't get the time from them to help these kids to get where they need to be. Because if we don't take the initiative ourselves to do it, nobody's going to do it for us. And our kids are going to be lagging behind. And it's not just our kids, and especially if the kids are in a public school system. The public school system is really bad because this is how they made it. They made it that way because this is how most of us go to school. Very few of us can afford private school. So you have to look at that and try to get it either in a community center or in a church or somewhere where these kids are learning. And while you're at it, have them get somebody that's got some knowledge of how to use computers so that they can learn that, because that's the thing right now. If they don't know how to use a computer, they're sunk before they even get out of kindergarten. Believe me. They have got to learn how to use these computers. So my thing is just put it in, try to get it into, get a group of parents or a group of people together and go to a community center and request of the director of that center, ask them about putting those kind of programs in their center, and maybe you may be able to help them out with it by talking to some of the teachers in the school and see who you could get that would volunteer their time. That's a solution. I don't know how good of a solution, but it's a better solution than not doing anything.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sister.
You're welcome.
We have Brother Khalifa and Sister Kokoya in the queue in regards to this topic. We have Brother Jason.
Get in there, bear, right?
Brother Jason.
Yes, how you doing, brother? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Please. Okay, great. Deepest apologies. I missed what you had mentioned me before. I caught my name. I didn't actually hear what it was that you requested.
We were bringing topics to the floor. And Sister Deborah brought the lack of education or the failing of the education system, and I saw that you jumped in the queue, so I thought you wanted to address it. But if you don't have anything, then, you know, it's no big deal.
Well, I don't know how relevant that it can be in direct to the point of what you guys were getting across. But so what I have that we're implementing, one of the things we're implementing in my company is a program I have. It's an illiteracy program. And the whole structure of it is to teach, to help, you know, to build literacy by teaching kids to become authors and filmmakers. And this is a program we plan on implementing. We were thinking about, you know, joining forces with a nonprofit, a pretty big one around this side of town. It's called Big Thought. Big Thought, they're a pretty big a nonprofit organization of helping kids. Looks like the majority of their kids are black kids. So we're looking to join forces with them. But then, you know, we started thinking we can do, we have the resources and everything to do it ourselves at the studio. You know, off topic, but yeah, you spoke with Brother Deontay a minute ago. I actually work with him. We're incubating in the same studio space as well. So side note, so, you know, we're working side by side. But to the point, we have a literacy program, and it's very active and very very broad in a way of like teaching, and it involves artists, illustrators, composers, producers, and kids that are looking to be those things, and teaching them and giving them another pathway to become a producer, to become an artist other than the norm. So you know, so as well as, you know, teaching them to become filmmakers, and the main point of teaching them literacy and getting their reading on point. The first phase of that is, you know, is building their literacy and writing and reading up in that. So, you know, off the rip, I was thinking that you had called me for something else, but just to converge on what you guys were talking about, that is something on the education side that we are implementing here in Dallas. So.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for your feedback, for your input.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, peace. All right. We have Brother Khalifa and Sister Kokoya in the queue. Brother Khalifa, you're up.
It is just a comment, just to piggyback on the sister talking about the educational system. Well, personally,
yes,
you know, I developed a little program for children between the age of about 6 and 10, maybe 11. And what the program does is, you know, it steps outside the X, Y, and Z, the 1, 2s, and 3s, and the ABCs, and it helps a child develop as a child. It helps a child develop as a young woman or a young man. It helps teaches the man or the little boy, that male, how to be a man, what it means to be a man. It teaches that young woman, you know, or that child, that little girl, how to become a young woman. Because with the developmental process in the educational system isn't always just designed to help develop them on the ABCs and 1, 2, 3 side. Because growing up in our community, man, we forced to make real decisions real early. So I have a program, and I'm implementing it to the best of my ability to, again, help develop the individual's role and help them understand responsibility and the coming forth into adulthood. You know, I think that that's one of the biggest things and one of the biggest failures in our community is our children are growing up so fast and they don't know what it means. The little boys don't know the difference between a male and a man. The little girls don't know what it means from a girl to a woman, but they quick to say, "I'm grown." They quick to not know how to read. Let's face it. Our young African-American men growing up graduate from high school with an 8th grade reading level, but they talking about they a man.
Right.
If you don't have the ability to respond, how can you say that you a man? You don't know how to respond correctly. So I got a program that's helping children develop the mind into being from one stage to the next. Just like in school, you go through grades. It's levels. They say it nowadays, it's level to this, man. You know, so it's just helping the children level up. Level up, man.
All right, brother. Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. So we got Sister Kokoya in the queue. Sister Kokoya.
Okay. Yeah. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes, I can.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I'm a single mother of an 11-year-old daughter, and what I found as far as the educational system failing our children, and I shared this with my daughter, as parents, it's our responsibility to become our child's first teacher. We are their first teacher before they enter school. So it's our job as parents to teach our children and expose them to words, sight words, math equations, reading books. We need to expose them to these things first. That way, the way I do my daughter, that way when it's exposed to her at school, she's already familiar with it. My daughter's a straight-A student. She's on the principal list, and she's been a straight-A student since she's in her school. And it's because I invest time into her to build her up, to level her up. She's already a business owner. She's already investing. She plays golf. So we have to expose our children to rise up because the school systems have been failing us for years. It just hasn't started. This has been going on for decades. So, and as you can see, the teachers are becoming younger and younger in our community as well. You have a program for teachers to teach in the inner cities just so their student loans can be forgiven. They don't care. They're just there to get their loans repaid, you know. So we have to spend the time and invest in our children because the minute that they start failing, they're already set up for failure because of the school system. So we can't go up to the school barking at the teachers because it's already designed for them to, you know, not to succeed. So we have to take a look at ourselves and figure out what are we doing to help our children succeed in school. So I just wanted to leave with that.
Okay, sister, thank you. So I just want to summarize in regards to this topic. I spoke with the sister earlier, and I was explaining that what a lot of these teachers are dealing with are behavioral issues with our kids. So, you know, as most of you guys know, you know, Brother Kareem and I, we have the Wheelchairs Against Guns and the workshops. We have the anti-violence workshops to, you know, teach the children about the dangers of bullying, gangs, and gun violence. Trying to conduct a workshop and watching these kids, they can't sit still for more than 2 minutes, 3 minutes. We have to keep changing the topics and changing the things that we show on the PowerPoints and the screen. They have no respect for the teachers. So as you said, sister, the teachers are being younger and younger and younger. That is because the teachers are trying to get experience, and those teachers are the ones who will just take the risk and come and teach in the inner city. Brother Kareem mentioned it a few weeks ago. There was a young lady there. We're talking about gangs and things like that, and she just blew up. Oh, you know what? F this. Y'all talk about my set. Y'all talk about this, da-da-da. The teacher tells her, calm down, you know, blah, blah, blah. She, don't you talk to me like that. And she talks all crazy. So then the brother tells her, hey, listen, sister, you know you got to do this. She's like, what? You crazy? I talk like this in front of my mother. I talk like this to my grandmother. So you have, let's say you have a white teacher who comes from the suburb who's not even used to seeing anything like that. Or maybe she sees something crazy on Facebook or whatever, but doesn't really expect that in her class. When you go in there and you deal with that and then you talk to your principal, it's like, oh, my God, what do we do? And so the mandate that we are hearing is they're just trying to push these kids along. And so, like you said, sister, it starts at home. The parents are younger, too. Grandmothers are younger. So it's they're not getting the discipline. They're not getting the reinforcement. And another contributing factor is the schools are supported by the local taxes. So if people are living in a lower income area and most of them are renters, that means you have a whole lot of people there, but you have a small tax base. And so they're not afforded the opportunities that some of the other districts with, you know, more affluent parents or a higher tax base or the same tax base but less student requirement, but, you know, less people living there. And so you have, like, a lot of different, you know, factors that go into this. It's a very tough, complicated problem for sure. What really I personally believe this needs to happen, you need to get these kids. You need to take them somewhere away from their city, somewhere away from their neighborhood, and there needs to be discipline instilled. You need to tell their parents that this child is going to be learning either martial arts or some other kind of discipline, some other kind of, they are disciplined, some other kind of activity. So that way the person in charge has basically the power to straighten that kid out when he gets out of line. It's kind of sort of like the boot camp, because our kids, they don't have any filter anymore. They have no guidance. They have no fear of adult, no respect for authority, nothing, nothing. And so it's very, so, you know, you were saying the schools are failing them, but that's because a lot of the parents are just sending their kids to school like, y'all babysit them for 8 hours. Get them off my, and then when they come home, sit them in front of the TV and let the TV babysit them for until they go to sleep. And I know this because I was a landlord in a low-income area, 15 families, all low-income, all single mothers. I saw it. I saw it. Some of them, the kids are still up 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night on a school night, didn't eat dinner yet, come in the morning to do whatever I need to do in the unit. The kid is home. I forgot. I didn't wake up. My mother didn't wake me up. My mother was sleeping. Mother missed the bus. Like, it's a lot of that going on. So, you know, just to let you know, sister, our solution to that is these community resource centers. And, I mean, so, you know, the members that know, my thing is we tell those, we provide those sisters the jobs, and we tell them we want your baby. We get the babies, we put this baby, we tell them this is what your baby is going to learn. And we have the baby going like karate class or boxing or one of these types of sports like that. So when they get out of line, they can be straightened out. 100 push-ups, push-ups on the knuckles, punch in the chest. I don't know. It's going to have to be something, because that worked for us. The teachers used to be able to paddle us, hit us on the knuckles. We go home, you got in trouble, you got a note home, your parents might straighten you out. We hated it at that time. Discipline was very necessary. It's very necessary. Or deprivation, take away their games or take away whatever. I just don't know, sister. I mean, it's a very complicated situation. So I want to open the floor. Sister Deborah. Hello, Sister Deborah. Okay. Well, Sister Deborah, that was that's our solutions to. Okay, Brother Cujo is in the queue. Brother Cujo. Okay, and hello? Sister Deborah, your phone is actually unmuted. You can actually talk to address everyone's comments on your you can address the comments on your hello, sister? You're pressing, I don't know what buttons you're pressing. Brother Cujo, jump back in the queue, brother. Press star 6, Brother Cujo. Sister Deborah, I don't know what you did. You muted your own phone. Sister? Okay, Brother Cujo. Yep. Go ahead, brother.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right. One of the things that I wanted to mention is in regard to the education dilemma. One of the things that people like us who are paying attention to stuff is probably.
Hello, brother. Your phone is going in and out. Hello?
Yeah.
Sister Deborah.
I don't know if that's a sister, man. Hello?
Her microphone muted and then it went in. I just heard like a glitch. But go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
Okay. One of the things that we need to consider looking at is the National Council for Social Studies. And every state has their own council for social studies where they basically are deciding the curriculum that's going to go into public schools and stuff like that. So, the people who are conscious of who's controlling the curriculum, we need to look into that a little bit more and actually look to provide some input into what's going to be taught in the public schools. And that's one of the way. That's one of the ways to do it. Also, working with the state school boards, so that we can have more input into what's going on and what's actually going to be taught in the public schools. But to piggyback off of some of the last things that was mentioned in this conversation, I think what I've noticed myself in large part is kids are not getting what we would call home training. Generally speaking, a lot of kids in the Black community are not getting good home training, which basically teaches them life skills. So I would say definitely the community resource centers that we looking forward to building would definitely serve to help in that area by teaching these young kids life skills, basically what it takes to make it in life and to be successful in the society that we live in. So to a degree, yeah, they're gonna learn different things about manhood, womanhood, being responsible, a bunch of different core things that are necessary and builds their mental fortitude in order to be able to handle themselves well in society and be in a position where they're actually able to offer something instead of looking for a handout. And that's just core principles of success. They would learn that. And I think you mentioned this earlier about the resource centers actually working to teach children different trades and stuff like that. And of course, anybody would know that those are necessary. And in learning that, whether it be little kids learning karate or when they're getting into the early stages of learning about being an electrician, a carpenter, or whatever trades we decide are necessary for our kids to learn, it would be beneficial for them to grow in society through programs that we are actually providing. Of course, having the discipline to go through it is going to be absolutely necessary, and that's what we'll do through the resource centers. And besides that, I think it's just a good idea to remind everybody why we're doing this and why it's so important, because we don't have problems that can't be figured out. All of us know that there are certain problems that exist in the Black community. We identify them. We don't dwell on it. We simply work to provide the resolution. Some of these things will take time, and all these things are pretty much going to take money. So as long as we all are coming together with a cooperative effort and know that, yes, it's going to take money, $10 a month is not a lot of money. $50 is not a lot of money, and it's worth it because of what we're building. Anybody that actually has value for seeing the growth in our community, it will be a contributed member. So I've been enjoying the conversation so far. I just wanted to give a little bit of input, and I hope everybody on the line is willing to put their money where their mouth is.
All right. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you. Sister Battle, is there something you want to contribute in summary? Hello? Sister, I don't know what's going on. Hello, sister?
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I'm having problems with my phone, so... yes, I appreciate everyone's input. I like the idea about going to a community center and talking to
the people that run it to see if maybe that might be a possibility of offering tutoring there. I have been trying to think on my own, maybe that I could see if I could get, especially like grandmothers that, you know, are willing to give some time to schools to help the children. You know, it's going to take time, but I can understand, like I said before, and someone else said, that the parents must take a active role, and a lot of them don't. And I'm not really sure how to motivate them. But I thank everyone for their input.
Okay. All right, thank you. We got Brother Ron. Brother Ron.
Hello, 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 Brother Lou.
Congratulations, Brother Ron. For all those on the call, Brother Ron had a new addition to his family.
Yes,
so want to thank you and congratulate you on behalf of Black Wallets Matter. So what's going on, Brother Ron? We're talking about the kids, your favorite topic, these kids and what we could
exactly.
We can do about them. Yeah.
I'm a little late, so I apologize to all the brothers and sisters. I'm calling a little late. I have a question. Whatever happened to the Fresh Air Fund? Remember that?
Yes, where they sent the kids to camp, right?
It wasn't a camp, but they stayed with a family somewhere out. Usually a white family, some of these kids learn how to swim and they learn how to feed goats and stuff like that. Like, I know a lot of people actually have it. I never got to do it, but I heard good stories about that stuff. Like, I mean, whatever happened to that type of stuff? That would be interesting.
Hey,
I mean, it's iffy now because there's a lot of weirdos out there. So, I mean, but I'm pretty sure it had to be monitored at some point back in the day. So,
it probably wasn't even monitored back then, because remember, that was, what was that, the 80s, right?
The 80s, early 90s or something.
Yes.
How about, what would it be like to send some of our kids from New York to some Black Wallace Matter kids in another state to have their kids come over here? For like a week, 2 weeks, something like that. Maybe our own type of Fresh Air Fund, but just something different. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I mean, that's something to consider. You know, I don't really have any input on that, to be honest with you, because I don't want to be responsible for somebody's kid. Yeah, I think your sister Allison may want to weigh in on that. I don't know. I don't have anything to say about that one.
These kids have no respect, and the parents don't hold them accountable
exactly.
for anything. If your kid, when I was a kid, my son is 23 now. When he was a little kid, I had a counselor's numbers, a teacher's numbers, and they called me just because, hey, Ronald was a little depressed today. You know, everything all right. Same little thing, and I held them accountable for stuff. These kids are acting crazy, and then when you tell the parents, they're like, oh, well, you know, you got to understand, he's stressed, but he's this. Like, no, your kid messes up. Like, I don't understand how these parents are, and that enables the kids. Because if I'm a kid and I know, if you tell my father on me and he's not going to get mad at me, he'll probably scream at you, I'm going to keep acting a fool. And a lot of it is these parents. I see it. I go to my niece's school, and when I was a kid, a lot of us when we were kids on the call, we might have been acting a fool, running around, maybe even cussing, but when you see an adult, you stop. You slow down, you calm down for a minute until they were out of earshot. Now, these kids just don't care no matter who's there, and nothing happens. It's crazy nowadays. I don't understand it.
Okay.
Said that, I'm sorry.
Yeah. it's something that we discuss all the time. So, I mean,
we need to do something with the parents. Sit them there, but what we need to come up with some kind of thing. Like, I'm just throwing it out there, but that would include the parents with the kids, but they would get something from. Because these parents don't want to do something for nothing. Not a monetary thing, but just something, hey, you know, your kid is doing this, we're doing it. Maybe if you guys do this project together and present it together, you know, your kid's going to get this kind of award, and that might encourage the kid to do something more, or encourage the kid to tell a parent, hey, look, I want to do this. I want to get this award, or, you know, the first five kids that get this in class with their parent, you know, we get to go on a movie thing with the teacher or something, or, you know, something. We need something to incorporate the parents with the kids, because these kids don't care because the parents don't care.
Right. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like, I'm just thinking about, like, the blueprint, right? We go, yeah. Parents, hey, you go to work, and then we got your kids, and now we try to shape and mold them, put them into some type of training, put them into something, some kind of supplemental education.
Oh, we're talking about the working parents. So that's good. We're talking about the working parents. That's good, because the good majority in my neighborhood don't work. And that's the sad part. So they're home all day doing nothing, and the kids go home and do nothing with them. They do nothing as a team when they should be doing something as a team.
Right. We have Sister Allison and Sister Bonnie in the queue. Is there anything else you want to say? Do you just want to summarize and say, man, we need to stop beating these kids? Is that what you're trying to say, brother?
You know what? Now they want to call a corporal punishment. I had plenty of old butt whippers, and it kept me alive. You know, even for a couple of months, it kept me alive. My son, you know what you got to do? I'm going to say one thing before I hang up. My son, when he was about 13, 14, he loved his little sneakers and stuff. You know, he thought he was cooler than he was. So he acted up in school, in the summer school, bad enough he's in summer school, and pretended to be his mother on the phone to the dean, which he still won't do the voice for me now. And I told his mother, you know, send him to the house, I'm going to talk to him. She's like, you better whip his butt. Better you than the police in the future. Fine. Send him to the house. Told her, send every pair of sneakers that he has now. Because he had a lot of sneakers and stuff. So I called her boyfriend, who was there. My son's like, I appreciate you buying my son's sneakers and stuff, but I'm going to hold on to everything for a while. No problem, brother. He was good with that. And then I went to National Wholesale Liquidators and bought him some sneakers called EV Striders with some Velcro straps. The spanking didn't hurt him. Those sneakers hurt him to his soul. And we got to do stuff like that. Take what they love, and they got to earn it back. So that year, after those EV Striders sneakers, he had the best school year he's had.
Ever since.
We need to whip their butts. We need to. But now everything is a charge. You hit your kid too much, you're going to jail. The kids hear that in the schools. If your parent hits you, you know, tell us, and this is that. But he has a bruise on his leg. Like, he was running, and he fell into the freaking bedpost, trying to ruffle his butt whipping. Now they want to charge you. It's crazy, bro.
You crazy. All right, thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you, guys.
Sister Allison, Sister Bonnie, and Brother Howard. Sister Allison?
Hi.
How you doing, sister?
I just wanted to kind of bring up another factor in some of the behavior of children that probably needs to be taken into consideration. So I volunteer with victims of sex trafficking here in Atlanta, and a lot of them are young women. Like, the youngest that we had in one of the safe houses was 12. And so a lot of the behavior sometimes has to deal with life issues that they're dealing with as young kids, and a lot of them are angry. A lot of them don't have parents in the home to teach them. So you have to take into consideration certain things, not just lazy parents that don't teach them, but some kids don't have parents. Some kids are in the foster care system, or some kids are actually having to raise their younger siblings and having to still go to school and try to learn and you know, be a child, but they're dealing with adult issues. And so sometimes some of the kids, their behavior stems from their home life, where they really don't have a home life, so they're forced to be adults. And so sometimes that behavior that comes out is not simply because their parents are not teaching them, it's because they don't have anyone to teach them. And then they end up in the system, or they end up on the street where, you know, people are preying on them. And so I just wanted to bring that up as well, because I work with young ladies in these situations. Initially when meeting them, they may have attitudes and, you know, may pop off, but It's because they're angry. They have a lot of stuff that has happened to them and that's going on, and I don't think sometimes that we as adults even ask, you know, what's going on? Why are you behaving in this manner? It's always simply just, well, they just need discipline. No, they need love. They need support. Right. They need people to show that they care about them. And so I just wanted to, you know, kind of bring that up and make sure that, you know, with these community resources that they're addressing issues, you know, asking the children, you know, is everything going on, and trying to see what their home life is like to make, you know, to see how other ways that they can be helped.
Sister, you brought up something very that's an important factor. So specifically, I was saying in regards to like our women, our little sisters, they have a whole other different thing that they're dealing with. They have a whole other set of problems that they're facing, especially coming from, you know, these rough environments. Like you said, they're being preyed upon. Sometimes they're being preyed upon by family members and, you know, all these other things. And so you are absolutely right that they need to be addressed with kid gloves, with white gloves, or, you know, treated as special cases. As you were saying, a possible solution that popped in my head, and I mean, this is, you know, I'm just throwing it out there. We probably need like a whole other school system or something for those troubled kids, and it may need a bit more intensive. So maybe it doesn't focus on academia specifically. Maybe it focuses on some of the things that the brother said in terms of the life skills and, you know, some of these other aspects, and then dealing with their psychological and their emotional trauma as well.
Yeah.
Because if a child is hurting psychologically, if a child is hurting emotionally, reading and writing, which is another form of mental stress or mental challenge, they have absolutely no time or no energy for that.
Mm-hmm.
So since you brought up something very valid, and you add yet another layer to the problems that we have to address. So this organization, all those who already understand the severity or, you know, what's going on in our Black community, this sister just brought up yet another layer for us to consider. So thank you so much, Sister Allison.
Thank you.
So we have Sister Bonnie and Brother Howard in the queue. Sister Bonnie?
I totally agree with Sister Allison. And it's not just our young girls, is some of this is happening to some of our boys as well. So it's not just gender specific. We really, really, truly need our own schools to deal with the things that's going on in these kids' lives. And then we can help them get through it, get past it, and then we deal with the academia, because they're going to need that, the academics too, but they got to deal with the things that are troubling them, the things that's got them angry. We have to help them deal with that first before we can even deal with academics. That's my thought.
Okay, sister.
That's my thought. But I do think we need to do it in an environment with children that are like them. They're with other Black children. They're not in a setting where there's a bunch of white kids there, and maybe there's three or four, maybe five Blacks in the class. They need to be in a setting where they can get some hands-on, some one-on-one, and they need to get it from someone from their own community. And they do need, I agree, they need love more than anything. And there are Black teachers out there that have that, and are willing to give that and want to give that. that we need our own schools where we can actually teach our own kids and pull them out of what we know now as the public school system. We need our own public schools where we deal with our own children. I think that will help a lot.
All right. Thank you, sister. Thank you for weighing in. We have Brother Howard and Sister Kakoya in the queue. Sister, do you have anything else you want to add, or you're fine?
Nope, that's all I had.
All right. Thank you so much, Sister Bonnie. Brother Howard, you're up.
Yes. Yeah, it's true that learning starts from age one, from the womb. You know, we need to start getting those kids while they're young. You know, it's all about having programs for them while they're young. You know, at an early age, because if you don't do anything, and by the time they get a certain age, 9 to 10 years old, they're already influenced by others, with the peer pressure, you know, peer pressure and things like that, you know, and they're already influenced by social media. You know, everybody wants to be on social media. Everybody wants to be on TV, you know, and a lot of things that's out there. There are some positive things, but a lot of the kids are not able to realize, you know, what's positive and what's negative, you know. And but we definitely need to start with the children for the next generation, you know. I'm all for, you know, programs that we don't have to wait for somebody else to open up an after-school program. We need to probably see if we could get a couple of buildings, you know, either lease or whatever, and start setting up some programs in different towns, different cities, you know, and give the kids extracurricular activities, you know, music, sports, arts and crafts. When I was coming up, we did woodworking. You know, kids need to learn basic skills, you know, electrical, home ec. A lot of these kids, a lot of these little girls don't even know how to cook. They don't even know the importance of eating vegetables and eating right, you know, and they're eating the fast food or the food that's not healthy for them to help them develop properly. You know, that has a lot to do with it also, you know.
Right.
But I kind of like what Brother Umar Johnson is trying to do. I don't know if he has accomplished anything, but I do know that in Harlem,
Jeffrey Canada,
P. Diddy has a school in Harlem. You know.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, he has a school in Harlem. Yes, he sure does.
Oh, I thought you were talking about, because I know Jeffrey Canada. Jeffrey Canada is the model that, you know, we as the black community, we would want that, because he took those kids in Harlem and they are like the top kids in the country. Those are some black kids from smack dab in the middle of Harlem, and he turned them into the top students in the country. Now, I didn't know Puff. So what Puff School, what kind of success has Puff School had?
I don't know what kind of success, but I have been seeing that he had hired a educator from Massachusetts that came in, and he came in and is running the school for him, and basically I've seen him on the news talk show TV1 in the morning. Every morning at 7 a.m. I'm kind of up early, you know, watching things like that, you know. But you know, I would like to see us, like I said once again, you know, put things into motion. You know, we know that we can't depend on the public school system to fully, you know, educate our kids or give them the extra stuff that they need. you know. I try to, like, my own son, I try to let him tell him that, you know, you're a good parent, but it takes a village to raise a child. And you got to keep your kids associated with positive things. But a lot of the inner cities, they took a lot of the sports and a lot of the bands, the marching bands and the music. They took a lot of the home ec classes, you know. They took a lot of that out. But, you know, that'll be an area that we can probably address, you know, for after school, a couple hours after school, you know, get people who know how to woodwork and a home ec, to teach the kids the importance of properly eating. You know, a lot of kids are catching different diseases at an early age, diabetes and high blood pressure and all that type of stuff too. All that's very important for them to develop and be able to deal with out here trying to make it, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, brother. You basically want to do it all, huh? but I hear you, brother. No, that's what it's going to take. I heard you when you said it takes a village. You are 100% correct. You know, so we're definitely, you know, like I said, the community resource centers, that's something that we're focused on. You know, not so much the sport aspect of it, because I believe that we don't need to be teaching our kids or spending. I mean, talking about for this organization, we don't have the resources to invest in anything that isn't going to bear fruit. So if we invest in a child, we want to invest in trade training. So like you said, the electrical, the woodworking, those things like that, those things were available in my school when I grew up as well. And those are some things that need to be re-implemented, especially in our community.
Mm-hmm.
We have Sister Kakoya and Sister Barbara in the queue, brother. Is there anything else you want to add in closing?
No, just get in touch with me after, you know, behind the scenes, and I'm very much want to be involved and have some input and want to participate also, you know.
Okay. All right. Yep. I'll text you right now. All right, brother.
Okay.
We have Sister Kakoya, and then we have Sister Barbara. Hold on. All right, Sister Kakoya.
Yeah, I just want to say I agree with the last brother on the call, pretty much everyone, in regards to the educational and schooling that we need for our children. But, yeah, I agree with the last brother that we need to talk behind the scenes and really get something going because, like one of the other sisters said, I can't remember her name, she mentioned the love that our children need, and it's true. I'm from Los Angeles, and I just moved here to Washington, D.C., and what I've found is that a lot of the children in the D.C. public schools, or where I currently live, I've had a valid resource tell me that the half, like 80% of the students in the school where my daughter attends have behavior issues, and so I don't know if you noticed in some of the schools you have the social workers involved and kids. There's a lot going on. So, we really do need to find programs to embrace our children. So I just want to leave with that.
Okay. Thank you, sister. Okay. So we have Sister Barbara in the queue next. Sister Barbara.
I do have a question. The gentleman that has the kids in Harlem that are excelling, is there a model, or can we find out from him the model that he used and take that model, or at least ask him if he would help us to take that model to help our children in other areas, because we need more than just that one group of kids that are excelling. We need our kids to excel, period.
So you're talking about the gentleman with the program in Harlem, Jeffrey Canada?
Exactly.
Okay, so, all right, so Brother Kareem and I have reached out to him. We have a sister that is part of the other organization, the Wheelchairs Against Guns, and she was working. So he retired. So just to give you guys full disclosure, this guy, he came out with his plan, and he reclaimed, I mean, I don't even know how many blocks it was, but he had billionaires, supporting his movement. So that just gives you an idea of the type of money that you need to do these things. But what he did was he knew what kind of parents that he was dealing with, and he knew the kind of educators that he needed. He had top teachers from all over the country, came in, paid them crazy wages, whatever was necessary. He knew that he was dealing with parents who are from an impoverished area. He provided, if I'm not mistaken, he provided like health insurance for these parents. He provided like additional behind the scenes work, remedial education things for them. The students, they were in really, really small classes, top of the line computers and everything else. And then he said, so in order to become a student in that school, it was a lottery process. Something funny happened. So he's doing the lottery process. There was two sisters. They were neighbors. One of the kids won. The other one didn't. The other lady looked to the other one and was like, "Oh, so you gonna go when he didn't select my child, but you gonna go and put your child? We said we was gonna go together. Matter of fact, I'm the one that told you about it." The sister, he was sitting there, he was like, "Listen, if you are trying to be a crab and pull this sister down in the barrel or in the bucket or whatever, leave this auditorium now." So the sister who was having an attitude, he kicked her out. Like, he plays no games. And when those kids, now I think like at their summer break or their winter break or whatever it is, he takes them to Disney World, and then they go someplace else like when they graduate or whatever. And they're at like the top grades in the country, black or white students. And these are kids from Harlem, and a lot of them have parents out on drugs and a lot. I mean, it's phenomenal what he's done. Obama tapped him to do a program somewhere in Washington, D.C. There's a program in D.C. It was kind of modeled off him, so he consulted on the project. But the thing was, he had so much money to do what he did this for real. He actually brought up, like, the houses around the block, like, so it's called the Harlem Children's Zone, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
He owned, like, the houses and the buildings. So if you guys know anything about New York, anything about Harlem, the real estate is crazy expensive. He brought up everything around there, insulated it. There's no hanging out. There's no – like, he wanted to control it 24 hours a day. So he basically made a safe zone in the smack dab in the middle of Harlem. It was phenomenal what he did, but, again, he had the resources. So, again, you know, some of the things that we're talking about, like Brother Cujo said, we're going to have to put our money where our mouth is.
Exactly.
You know, that's one of the biggest things. So, you know, I believe right now everyone that's on the call, we had a majority of the guests leave. So I think everyone who's on the call is actually members. So everyone has already put their money where their mouth is. So, we're already doing our part. It's just a matter of trying to communicate the severity and the importance of our mission. That's really what it is. And then it's a matter of hiring the right type of people and who know what they're doing. And, of course, you guys know, I say this all the time, I want to just hire the best people for the job. That's the other reason. So I don't want to go in there and sit there and say, "Hey, let me guess, I'm not an educator. I am not a psychologist. I am not a child behaviorist. I am none of that." We go and find who the top people are in the country, just like this guy did, and we put them to work. and we let them work with our children.
Right.
So, sister, I believe that was it. We ran this conversation. I'm gonna unmute you, sister. Ladies and gentlemen, we have had a really nice town hall meeting. It is closing in on 11 o'clock. That's kind of like the cutoff time that we want to keep here so that we can be respectful of people's time. I just want to say to all guests, there's mostly everyone left, but for the guests that are on the line, I want to just get some feedback. I believe we have Sister Deborah. Sister Allison, are you the member? Did you join us already? I believe I saw someone became a member. Are you a member, Sister Allison?
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Last week, well, so you called from a different number.
Yeah.
Sister, don't try to trick me, okay?
Okay.
All right. So Sister Deborah is the only guest on the line. So let's get feedback from Sister
Hello?
Deborah. Yes, sister.
Okay. Yes, I did fill out the information last week.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw it on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
So I did fill out the information. Now I just learned out about the associate member. But
mm-hmm.
I want to get involved in doing that.
Okay. Okay. Well, but, again, like I said, so, you know, I spoke with you earlier. You can just easily go to the website. You can click the blueprint. There's a link. It says menu. And you can watch. You can learn everything, you know, what we're about. So it's, you know, it's more. So today we addressed, you know, businesses, and we addressed, you know, our children and, you know, the things that we need in our community. A week or two ago, maybe even three, we also addressed mentors. So we had a sister who came on, and she worked with children. Hey, we have people coming on at the end of the call. So she actually worked with children, and she suggested mentorship. In terms of something that we could do now, she suggested that we start forming memberships mentorships, and started going into these children's homes to get an accurate assessment of what is going on, what we're actually dealing with. And that was like an excellent idea. Brother Ron was really, really, you know, he was really excited about that idea. He had some, personal things going on in his life, you know, bundle bringing and bundles of joy and things like that. But, he was really interested in following up with that idea, and there were also some other people who contacted me behind the scenes in regards to how we would implement that for the organization. The thing about it, so we're, you know, so as you can tell, we're all from all over the country right now, so it's kind of hard to make a coordinated effort for that particular thing. So what it would have to be, I would probably have to contact everyone in local areas and say, hey, listen, are you interested in mentoring a young brother or sister, or at least at the very least finding out what's going on and then becoming involved in their school life or in their academics. So, you know, I just wanted to present all of the solutions that we had in regards to addressing the issues with our children and, and their education. And then in addition to the one that I told you earlier with trying to get your local community, trying to get them to sign a petition, get them involved, go speak to your local congressman, assemblyman, whoever it is, and let him know that you feel that the schools are failing, and apply some political pressure. So that's, you know, I just want to summarize with that. We have a new caller on. We're kind of at the end of this. But let me just acknowledge the caller. Hold on, please. 267 area code. Who's calling?
My name is hello? Mike. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
My name is Mike. I was just listening, man. I'm sorry. I was just listening.
Okay. No problem. No problem, brother. Well, we're we're ending it up now. We were on since 9, so we're at the end. But, you know, hopefully you can join us next week, brother.
Yes, I will come back.
All right?
I will come back next week.
Okay. And for everyone else on the line, all the members, all the brothers and the sisters, I want to thank you for coming on this town hall meeting. And good night. So let me unmute everyone's phone, and you can have your last comments or, you know, say good night to everyone. Hold on. Okay.
Good night, all. Be safe.
Thank you.
Good night to you, brother. Mom. All right.
Good night, everybody. I wish I would have signed it earlier.
All right.
Whoever call me.
Okay. Okay. Take it.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Promises.